Brother Fuller for our first message tonight, and we're glad to have him. Actually, I guess this is his last message, but we certainly appreciate him being with us. And I just, before he comes to speak, being his last message, I want to just say a word about him. I think probably the first tape that I heard on any kind of evidence for the King James Bible from a manuscript point of view was by Dr. Fuller. He has a tape on which Bible, and I listened to that along with, as soon as I listened to it, and I went into manuscript evidence by Dr. Ruckman. But I got a hold of his books, and I have read all three of his books, and I've read which Bible through twice, studied it carefully, and I'm studying it through again. And he has made a great contribution in these days to our Bible. And I'm glad to have him here in this conference, and he's going to come speak for us this time. Now, do we need to get you plugged in here tonight? Okay, all right.
My subject has been announced, I believe. The men of the KJV, their devotion, their scholarship, and their plan compared with the Westcott Corpus Committee of the Revised Version. Two verses I want to read. Daniel 1, verses 4, verses 20. Children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, to whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. 20. And all manners of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all of the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. It was my privilege to succeed Dr. O.W. Van Asdel, pastor of the Wealthy Seed Baptist Church for some 25 or 30 years in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he stepped aside at the age of 88 and died a few months following my coming there. But one of the sayings he said, he was a very fine Bible teacher, one of the sayings that stuck with me was this: Satan began his war against God under the tree of knowledge, and he's camped there ever since. Now, he did not mean by that he was against scholarship and genius, but he knew that there were many phonies in the scholarship field that leaned heavily upon other scholars and not upon their own study. And that has been found quite a bit all through the years. But God has used men with masterminds and great scholarship, such as Paul, Augustine, Calvin, Luther, the giants of the Reformation. But what a snare! Scholarship has proved to so many, and especially in these days. And I say this without hesitation or trepidation, that the King James Version men were the greatest group of scholars of any version. God knew what he was doing. He always does. He's never made a mistake. He's never done a wrong thing. Everything he's done has been done for his glory and for our good. And if we could get that through our thick heads, it would help a lot. But sometimes we play the fool and refuse to believe it. Now, God chose the King James Version to be translated at the height, as you know, of the Elizabethan English, Shakespeare, Milton, and before that. He chose an Erasmus, who dates 1466-1536, who was a genius, and three kings vied for his citizenship. King of England, King of France, Emperor of Germany. They offered him anything in their realm if he would become a citizen. He turned them all down. That's more than a lot of scholars I know would do today. Now, Erasmus could do the work of 10 men. He was offered the cardinal's hat, turn that one down. They said if he'd pulled the right strings, why, he could have become Pope, which he didn't do. He was a humanist, that's true, but he was a humanist in a far different way than the word connotes today. Very far. It is little known, but I read it somewhere in a biography of Erasmus, that he was for some time when he was quite young, thrown into fellowship with the Brethren of the Common Life. I believe he had to study under them. And they were a group in the Catholic Church at that time that did revere and believe the Bible, and taught it as I understand it. And he got his reverence for the scriptures through them, as I gathered he did. He had his faults, but God used him. You know, they throw it up to you, well, Erasmus was a Catholic, he died a Catholic, and he was a humanist, and he was this, and he was that. Well, let's stop and get down to cases, shall we? How about you? Have you ever stopped to wonder how in the world God could ever use you or me? With all our faults and foolishness and foibles and mistakes, I can't understand it. I'm amazed at why or how God could ever use me. I don't know. Now, he wrote in praise of folly, Erasmus did, and he took the hide off the Catholic Church in doing so, in a very sarcastic way. And I think the Pope would have laid hands on him, but he was so popular, he had become a household word that they didn't dare touch him. Now, I'm going to say something that you may disagree with, but I hope you'll still be my friend. I have known Billy Graham and Carl McIntyre and Harold Arkengay and Harold Insell for many years. I can't go along with them in what they do. I had to stop going along with Carl McIntyre and with Harold Arkengay and, no, Harold Insell, rather, Billy Graham. I was with them on the board at Wheaton. I was on the board there for 40 years until I finally could not have a clear conscience and remain on it when the graduate professors downgraded the King James Version and upgraded the New English Bible and Good News for Modern Man. Now, I know these men have their faults, but as far as I know from knowing them, they're going to be in heaven. And I pray for them every day. If anybody wants to know where I stand concerning them, all they have to do is ask me. Now, if that's heresy, all right, you'll have to make the most of it. That's what I believe, that's where I stand. And I do so because I know that God has used and is using their ability, even though they make very serious mistakes, as I know and you know too. But God somehow is using them, and I thank God for that too. Now, Erasmus gathered, as I understand it, some 9 manuscripts out of many that he had access to. He was constantly traveling, constantly examining manuscripts, genius that he was, and he formed the Textus Receptus. And then what I've said before, I repeat again for those of you who are not here. For Erasmus, through the Elsevier brothers, who were printers and also scholars, and Stevens and Beza, who had 9 editions of the Textus Receptus, all together from Erasmus through Beza, there were some 21 editions of the TR. And yet, in all of those, there were only minor changes made. And I believe God led Erasmus to these manuscripts because they were the best of that time and they were the same manuscripts that Luther used in his translation into the German. Now, William Tyndale was a genius in languages. He knew French, Hebrew, and Greek, and German, and Spanish, and Dutch, and Latin just as well as you and I know English. He was at home in any one of those languages. He was that much of a genius. And he boasted one time, a pardonable boast, he said, the day is coming when the most ignorant plowboy in England will be able to read the Bible in his own language. Well, Henry VIII was ruling England at that time. And as you know, he was far, far, far from a saint. Married 8 times. And Henry VIII heard about this, and he set about to make a conspiracy. He finally got someone that pretended to be the friend of Tyndale, who betrayed him. In October 1536, at Vilvoorde, just outside of Brussels, Belgium, He was strangled and then burned to death for what he believed, because he had translated the Bible from the Greek into the English, and also part of the Old Testament, all of the New Testament. And his prayer before he was strangled, it was heard, he was heard to say, to pray, "O Lord, open the eyes of the King of England." 11 months after that, Henry VIII reversed himself and ordered the Bible to be printed in the English language. Once again, God's word is true. The heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. Like rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. Follow history a moment, will you please? After Henry VIII, Edward VI ascended the throne, a sickly young man. He reigned only 5 years and died after 5 years' reign. But during that time, he'd been touched, or before that time, by the Reformation. And it was Edward who encouraged the printing of the Bible until there were some 18 editions of the Bible printed in his reign. And then after that, he died. And Bloody Mary, Edward's half-sister, came on the throne. She was all for the Catholic Church. She reigned only 5 years, but during that time, she had personally sent 265 men, women, and children to be burned at the stake. You don't have anyone like that, and you're not in that danger yet. You get that, don't you? And after Bloody Mary, or first before that, I want to add a word about the King James men before I forget it. I believe I can say this without any question. They were the only committee on a translation that suffered for what they believed. Because their loved ones, their friends, or themselves were either banished or put in jail or burned at the stake or left to rot in dungeons because they believed the Bible. That's your heritage, and that's mine. And for God's sake, let's wake up and do something about it. And if you're here tonight determined to be neutral, God help you. If you get these facts, again, I tell you, and I can't tell you too much, then it is your duty, your bounden duty, to take your stand for this no matter what comes, come H or HW. It's a polite way of saying hell or high water. Now, following Bloody Mary, Elizabeth reigned brilliantly for 44 years. And then King James. And brethren and sisters, King James was no saint. He sent Sir Walter Raleigh, to the headsman's block at the behest of the Spanish ambassador. He had no use for two groups in his court. They were there because of their genius, because of their knowledge. One was the Puritans, the other the nonconformists. Any suggestion from either of those groups, he knocked it down. Wouldn't have anything to do with it. But one time, John Reynolds, from one of those groups, suggested, "Your Majesty, I believe we should have a new version of the Bible." And there had been talk about it before then. And King James took it up and immediately gathered together, with the help of others' advice, this group of men. Now, you can find out who these men are. I'll tell you just about a few of them. In which Bible? I want to give credit where credit is due. Terence Brown is the one that enlarged upon that chapter, the learned men. And when I learned that he was interested in the manuscript that I'd sent over to England, and he wrote me and gave me the encouragement to print it, otherwise I might not have done it. And he asked if he could change it. I said, "You go ahead. You know far more about it than I do." And he went ahead and went to the British Museum and got got a thumbnail sketch of all those great men of God in this book, which Bible, called The Learned Men. But I want to give you just a little rundown. John Boyce was one of the translators. Now, you play this on your mandolin, will you? At the age of 5, he could read the Bible in Hebrew. At the age of 14, he was a proficient Greek scholar. And for years, he spent from 4 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night studying languages and manuscripts. And I just can't help, I can't resist adding this. He was not cursed. Never repeat that. Roll it over my tongue. He was not cursed with television, with radio, with telephones. He had time to think. And God knew what he was doing when he chose these men at such a time. Or was helped in the process of choosing them. Let me go back a minute. Repeat something. In the early church, there was a group of men, I don't know who they were, maybe Dr. Ruckman will know, I don't, that gathered together, and out of a vast mass of manuscripts, they chose 27 manuscripts. Now, how do we know that? Well, we got it right here in the Bible. Matthew to Revelation. And God was in that, I believe, in causing those men to choose the manuscripts that were the best and the most accurate and the nearest to the originals. But then between that time and the time of the King James Version, there were some 1,300 years. And I'm going to say this again, I repeat it, and I don't make any bones about it, because you need to have this repeated again and again and again to get it, even as I did. There's some 1,300 years. And we ask, where was God all during that time? Well, I think it was James Russell Lowell that had a little bit of poetry. Right forever on the scaffold. Wrong forever on the throne. But behind the dim unknown, standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. Now stop and ask yourself the question, or tell yourself, I'll tell myself too. Marvel at the way God has guided and led you all through life until this very hour. He does that with all of his children. And you mean to tell me that he's going to forget and go away from and depart from this book and let it go willy-nilly all through the ages and but with man's devices? He is not. He's kept it. And all during those centuries, 13 of them, there's a little band or a little nation called the Waldensians in the Italian Alps that were snowed in 4 or 5 months out of the year. And they had scholars among them, and they kept copying, comparing manuscripts, and copying them carefully, meticulously. As they did so, the Bible got a hold of them. The Bible caused them to put their faith in this book instead of any man like the Pope, and the Pope didn't like it. And he sent some of his soldiers up there to climb the mountain fastnesses and arrest them. Sometimes they did. When they did, I suppose they were given carte blanche by the Vatican to take those men and women and children and bind them up like balls, roll them down the mountainside to their death. Some of your forebears may have been one of those. And then they were called into court. And when they were taken into court, they were given a chance to speak. And in order to defend themselves, they quoted whole chapters and sometimes whole books of the Bible. And that got under the skin of ill Papa. He didn't like it at all. That's what made him so mad, because they took the Bible as their authority and not any man. Well, then came the Reformation. And these Waldensians heard about Luther and Calvin, and they walked across the Alps. And with them, they brought the manuscripts they had carefully preserved. And they compared them with the manuscripts of Calvin and of Beza and of Cal- Luther, and they found that they were almost identical. Now that's God. And when I learned that, I just thank God that much more because of how he has kept this wonderful book. Then there was another man on the King James Version Committee, Lancelot Andrews. He was the overall chairman. He was the greatest linguist of his day. He knew and spoke 20 different languages. He spent 5 hours a day in prayer. And whenever he came into the court of the king, King James had given the order, no levity, no joking, when Andrews is here because he thought so highly of him. And then one other I want to mention, I can't keep from mentioning this one. John Chatterton. He knew Greek and Hebrew and Latin, just like you know English, and even much better. And he died at the age of 103. At the age of about 85 or so, he was invited to speak at a friend's church. And the place was crowded. And he got up, didn't have any watches then, to shake, see if they're stopped or something like that. All he had was an hourglass. So he put it up there. When the sands of time fell and powered up, he turned over. Went for another hour. Then he started to turn over for a third hour, but he stopped. He said, no, I think that I'm getting a little tired. And so I believe I should quit. And an eyewitness to that said that as one man, they rose out of their seats and cried, for God's sake, go on. You and I don't know anything about that. You've never had, at least I haven't, that kind of spiritual hunger. We're the most spoiled, rotten, ripe generation the world has ever seen. Now, most of these men, a good part of them, I believe, if I'm correct, the KJV, were members of the Church of England. And we would differ with them on some things, but they all believed in all of the Bible, and they had a special reverence for it. Not all of them had the light that we had. You have far more light than they did. And don't try to find flaws in them. I know that if I had lived in the day of Calvin, I couldn't stand for his burning of Servetus. Although he talked to the council at Geneva and asked them not to burn him, but hang him, I believe. I couldn't go along with Luther in the peasant war. Neither could you. And his anti-Semitism. But God used those men. God used Balaam, a false prophet, to give some of the great prophecies of the Bible. And he turned around and used a lowly mule to rebuke the madness of the prophet. God can use anything, and he can use anybody. So don't get high hat or think that you're somebody just because you've been given gifts. May it humble you, and may you say, and may I say, thank you, Lord, and I want to use them for your glory. That's all. There were giants, these men were, in scholarship and piety. And don't let anyone tell you that the modern scholars of today are greater. That is not true. They're pygmies today compared to these men. Now, how did they proceed? When do I quit? Huh? I don't want to trespass on somebody's time. I'm trying to get through here as soon as I can. 48 were finally resolved into this committee. 54, I believe, were chosen, but some dropped out because of illness or of death. There were 8 committees formed of 6 each. And each committee was given books, certain books to translate. And then these books were exchanged with another committee so that each committee checked on the other. At last, John Boyce headed up a committee to go over all of it. And then to present it to King James. Now keep that in mind, will you please? What's wrong with the revised version of 1881? Around the year 1870 or 75, there was a cry went up, revision, revision. Westcott and Hort, two two brilliant Cambridge dons, and Bishop Ellicott engineered, dominated, and domineered that whole committee. 40% of the time was a debate between Hort and Prebendary Scrivener. Now, I checked on Scrivener at Calvin College, and I asked if they had any writings. They did. Two volumes, Introduction to the New Testament Criticism, about 900 pages. When you read those volumes, you know that he was a scholar. And he kept, alone, single-handed almost, he kept the Revised Version from being worse than it is, and it's bad enough now, with 33,000 changes that it was made, in comparison to the King James. Now, when the debate was over, the vote was taken. And many times, Scrivener lost. All of the committee was given the Westcott and Hort Greek text that they had spent 20 years on, given a copy of it. They were sworn to secrecy that they would not divulge it until after the Revised Version had been published. You know why? They were scared to death of John W. Burgon. And if Burgon had known that before that book had been published, he would have torn it to bits, and I don't think it would ever have been published. It's now dead as a dodo, and I thank God for it, and I hope it stays that way. Now, contrast this method with the one that was used by the King James Version. Now, let me read to you, will you please? Out of True or False, those bishops of the Church of England. This is an extract from the protest of the archbishops and bishops of the Church of England in united protest to Bishop Colenso, 1863, over 100 years ago. All our hopes for eternity, the very foundation of faith, our nearest and dearest consolations, are taken from us if one line of that sacred book, the Bible, be declared unfaithful or untrustworthy. Now that's how much they thought of the book back there over 100 years ago. There were scholars in those days. Let me read you this other one by John Wesley just below it. I build on no authority, ancient or modern, but the Scripture. I want to know one thing, the way to heaven, how to land safe on that happy shore. God himself hath condescended to teach the way. He hath written it down in a book. Oh, give me that book at any price. Give me that book. Now, there was a great effort made to replace the King James Version with the Revised Version. They went all out, whole hog and everything else. The first week it was out, it sold a million copies in England and America. Now it's dead, and I hope and pray God it'll stay that way. But now the same thing is being repeated today, so help me, in the New American Standard Version. Now what is that? That is a warmed-over version of the American Standard Version of 1901. And the American Standard Version of 1901 is a blood brother to the Revised Version of 1881. And all three of them together are based upon the worst manuscript and the worst theory imaginable. And all three of those, along with all of the other modern versions of the Bible today, are based upon the Westcott and Hort Greek text. Now, I might stop here and say this. You're going to be on one or two sides to take the choice. Maybe you've taken it already. I hope you have for the right choice. You are either going to stand for these modern versions based upon this spurious, false text and theory, the oldest is the best, which is not true, or you are going to stand for the Textus Receptus, upon which the King James Version was founded, and the Textus Receptus, which agrees with these 5,000 extant Greek manuscripts in the world today in between 90 and 95%, and the Revised Version, or rather the Westcott and Hort Greek text, disagrees with those 5,000 manuscripts in the same percentage. Now take your choice. They say in Michigan here, you either fish, cut bait, or go back to shore. You better hurry up and do it. I'm not mad at you, but I'm just getting a little excited. Now, let me give you one more illustration of how a godly, great man can be fooled. Count Tischendorf was a godly man. He was a Christian, a great scholar. He had edited 7 editions of the New Testament text in the Greek. And he said that the 7th text that he edited was the best that could be found. Then he journeyed to Mount Sinai. And there he saw in a wastebasket, now you tell me how it got there, in a wastebasket he saw a manuscript which immediately he realized was an old manuscript. His eyes lighted up and the monks saw it and saw his eyes and they refused to let him take it out. But he made contact with the Tsar of Russia and got his permission to get it out. And I saw it over in the British Museum several years ago, lying there, opened up, and they paid $450,000 for it because you might have done the same thing if you had been in Tischendorf's shoes. Supposing you had found a manuscript that had gone back for something like 1300 or 1400 years to 350 A.D. You would have had something in your possession that was really valuable and precious. And he fell for antiquity. Cambridge and Oxford feted him and dined him. He was hailed as a great scholar. And you know what he did? He wrote an 8th edition to his Greek text. And he changed it 3,000 times in favor of Codex Sinaiticus, which he discovered on Mount Sinai. Now, I'm through. But I want to read something, one more. I like it. The starry firmament on high, and all the glories of the sky, yet shine not to thy praise, O Lord, so brightly as thy written word. The hopes that holy word supplies, its truths divine and precept wise, in each heavenly beam I see, and every beam conducts to thee. Almighty Lord, the sun shall fail, the moon her borrowed glory veil, and deeper reverence hush on high, the joyful chorus of the sky. But fixed for everlasting years, unmoved amid the wreck of spheres, thy word shall shine in cloudless day, when heaven and